This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, this is the Breakfast Grill and I am Tan Chen Lee. Almost every industry uses industrial brushes for a variety of purposes such as maintenance, construction, manufacturing, agriculture, and many others. It's an often overlooked but crucial element in all businesses. In Malaysia, the industrial brush accounts for 45% of the total local brush industry that represents 255 million ringgit in value. Today, I will be speaking to one of the key players in the manufacturing of industrial brushes in Malaysia, who is also seeking listing on the ACE market of Bursa Securities. The company that I'm referring to is Yuli Pacific Group Berhad, and their executive director, Ang Poyi, joins us today. Good morning, Poyi.
Hi, good morning.
So since early 2000, Yuli has distributed and later manufactured industrial brushes for the rubber glove manufacturers. Sales from the glove sector made up 32% of your total revenue last year. Why are your brushes used more widely in glove manufacturing and the other industries seem to contribute less to your top line numbers?
So actually, for our previous record, actually our managing director, Mr. Ali Leong, started as the trading. So as the business opportunity grow from the trading side, actually Mr. Ang get the insights of the demand for the industrial brushes for the glove manufacturers. So from there, it actually started, we changed our lines to actually manufacture the brushes for the glove manufacturing. So for our previous record, we just stabilized it as the industrial brush suppliers for the glove manufacturers. And then sooner or later, when we have the knowledge and we have the machines to build and to produce more of the precise this brush for the other sectors.
So I suppose it's the legacy relationship reason that, you know, you're closer to the rubber glove sectors than the others.
Kind of.
Okay, but if we also look at your 2020 numbers, you've recorded 43% increase in revenue and almost 100% increase in PAT attributed to higher sales from the glove manufacturing industry. Yuli seems to be over-reliant on the rubber glove sector. Do you plan to diversify your customer base to other industries as well?
Yes, so in the prospectus itself, we actually say that our future growth and strategy is to actually diversify our business segments into others, industries such as agriculture and glass industries and so on. This is actually our from digitalizing the proceeds, actually we were getting the funds to actually get the proceeds to actually acquire more advanced machineries to support our growth.
Do you need very different machines to or expansion to your existing line to be able to tap into these new industries that you're targeting to explore into?
The machines is basically, I could say it's the same. It's just that the carriage that we need to actually put to cater to grab the different sizes of the brush, and then actually the method of doing it is based on the research from our engineering team on actually how to actually to maximize the utilization of the machines to produce the custom-made brush.
And how much are you targeting to set aside from your IPO proceed for this new industry diversification?
So based on the utilization of proceeds, as they said in the prospectus, so actually the major portion of the funds, it's about 10.9 million of it, is actually to purchase our additional manufacturing machineries and equipment.
But if we were to cast those extraordinary results in 2020 aside, as the pandemic eases into the endemic stage, what is the expected revenue and PAT growth rate moving forward?
So actually, as we are entering the endemic stage, so I think the glove demands will still be there because based on the STAR reports during March, I think, the reports goes by that the glove manufacturing segment actually is going to forecast a growth of between 12% to 12 to 15% of the export of the glove manufacturing. So regardless of that, I think as we move forward for our business, I think the glove sectors would become stabilized for our revenue. And as I mentioned, that we are actively diversifying our new business segments to the other customers as well. So I think it will become some sort of like the leverage in our business growth.
So what is the numbers that you're looking at in terms of revenue and PAT growth rate for the next 2-3 years?
I think positively, it would be remained into 5 to 10% of our revenue growth.
5 to 10% of your revenue growth. You're saying that this will be the normalized growth rate rather than the 43% and the 100% that we saw in 2020, right?
Yes.
If I were to move our attention to your current market share, because you currently, you command about 13% market share in the domestic market. In terms of business expansion, do you plan to expand on this 13% market share in the domestic market, or do you plan to further develop the export market?
Yes, actually, currently we are exporting to different countries. For example, like in Vietnam, Thailand, and Indonesia. In fact, that we have two offices, which is a sales office in Thailand and Indonesia as well, to actually help us to cover and, you know, to dwell deeper into the Thailand market and the Indonesia market.
What about the domestic market? How do you plan to expand further in the domestic market?
So in the domestic market, I think there is still a big chances for us. I mean, the big opportunity for us to actually tap into agriculture and, for example, like semiconductors and so on. So from there onwards, we are actually tapping bases with our existing customers, like the agriculture, for example. We did provide brushes for them to clean the eggs, and maybe the harvest company that we produce brush for them to wash the produce and so on. So from that perspective, we have the confidence actually to tap more into the domestic market, as in the semiconductors and agriculture and so on.
What would that translate in terms of market share?
We were hoping to actually to see the size of our market share increase moving forward.
And what is the number that you have targeted in your mind?
Actually, I would hope to see that, I mean, in the near future, I think it would be around 2 to 3% increase. I mean, as it stabilizes, I would hope to see that 2 to 3%.
2 to 3% increase in the next year or the next 2 years? What is the time horizon that you're looking at?
So I think for the more comfortable side, I think it should be around 2023 onwards moving forward. So I think it will be, yeah, because we have to get the utilizer proceeds to actually get the machineries in, ready to set up and this and that. So yeah, we will need time to adjust like our manufacturing machineries and something like that.
Right. And if I were to look at your business relationship that you have with your major customers, there is a range of relationship that is established from 2 to 20 years. But most of them is still on a project basis or as needed basis. Why do you not have long-term contract established with these customers of yours?
So based on our financial history of our long relationship with this love players, as I suppose you're mentioning. So from our experience, I think the glove sectors has played a big part in our company. But from our analysis and something like that, it kind of stabilizes for the glove sectors. But then moving forward, as our company is growing, we will definitely seek more opportunity out there other than the glove sectors.
Because my question is actually, would you want to establish long-term contract with these customers instead of having a relationship which is very project basis or as needed basis?
Actually, we do have like the contract basis for example, like the not so specific specifications that needed by our customer, because mostly of our products is customized. So that's why the customers wouldn't have like a long-term contract for the customized brush. But on the other hand, we in our customer basis, we still provide OEM service for our customers. So for those specification, it does not require a lot of customization or any other things. So those are the things that are buying with the longer term contracts.
How long is longer term contract usually for you?
I think in my customer base, I have the customers that buying the contract with us for an amount of quantity, but just not like how many years, but just a big amount of quantity that they require us to produce for them.
I see. So it's based on quantity. So I guess it's still very project-based in this case, as if I were to read it correctly.
Yeah, because there's a lot of customization that is needed for our business segments.
Okay, let's move our attention to the trading segment. Because I know 30% of sales is contributed from the trading segment. Is that segment a growth focus as well? And what is the targeted growth here for it?
For the trading segment itself, because based on the revenue portion, I think 70% of the growth, 70% of the revenue would be coming from the manufacturing segments, and then the about 30% of the revenue coming from the trading segment. So for the growth factor, actually, we would like to focus on the manufacturing segments because we can easily control the profit margins and so on. For the trading segments, we currently having the overseas office, as I mentioned just now, in Thailand and Indonesia. So moving forward, we were hoping to actually tap business into both of the market areas to actually expand our trading industries to both of the countries.
And is Thailand and Indonesia going to be the only two geographical region that you would like to focus on? And are you going to also look at a third country perhaps?
So this question has been asked a lot based on my previous interviews and stuff like that. So actually, if the opportunity arrives, then definitely we will expand it maybe into Vietnam or some other places that we see that the opportunities is there, then definitely we will grab it.
Well, what kind of opportunity do you have to wait for in these countries like Vietnam or others? Are you looking for like a suitable distributor?
So actually, it is to actually to have a suitable candidate to actually look over the offices in the foreign countries, because like different countries, they definitely have different cultures. So if I were to put a Malaysian into maybe Thailand or Indonesia, they wouldn't have like this cultural sense in that country. So I think the part of it, I think, is because we need to have to meet the right people, which is from the country itself, to actually to run the business for us.
All right. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. This morning, we're speaking to Ang Po Yee, Executive Director of Yuli Pacific Group Berhad. Up next, we discuss COVID-19 impact on the business and minimum wage challenges. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. We are speaking to Ang Po Yee, Executive Director of Yuli Pacific Group Berhad. Before the break, we'll be discussing Yuli's dependence on the rubber glove sector and also their expansion plans. Now, I noticed that one of your major competitors, namely Yuli Industrial Brush Sendirian Berhad, shares a very similar name with you. How do you differentiate yourself from your close competitor?
So actually this, it really, how do I say it? It's like a lot of customers was like asking, is this the same company? Because the names is like, oddly, it's the same exactly. So I think how do we differentiate is because the Yuli Industries that you were mentioning, it's more towards on producing like household brushes. But comparable to us, we are producing more in the customizable industrial brushes for our customers.
But in terms of the branding, how are you going to differentiate? Because I suppose when you use industrial brushes, you don't really see a branding. But then isn't there a trademark concern over here?
No, not really. Because I'm quite confident to say that the most of the customers know us by our services, not by our brand name itself.
And then what about dealing with competition from other industrial brush producers like CE Brush Manufacturing or My Brush Industries? How do you differentiate or compete with these people who's also in the same segment as you?
As I mentioned, because we have a very long established connections with the big players in the Malaysian market. So I think we definitely have like a positioning in the market itself that we are quite confident that we say that we are well known in the market, in Malaysia market industries. So just a side note that actually we were the first one to get listed in this brush segments, brush industrial segment. So actually we are quite confident that our market, I mean, based on this experience, I think we are quite confident to say that we actually have the higher positioning in the market itself.
I see. And if I were to look at the Malaysian industrial brush manufacturer, it's a relatively niche market because there's only 10 market players that is involved in the in this segment. I would think that this is a pretty low barriers of entry industry. I mean, how do you deal with new entrants to the market?
The new entrants is definitely, we're going to look it into like two perspectives. It's either it's from the overseas or there's a new emerging markets in Malaysia itself. So I think the low barrier comes if you're talking about in Malaysia, if there's maybe near future that there will be some other industrial brushes manufacturing that established in Malaysia. I think it would be quite hard for them because it's that because due to our long established relationship with the existing customers and we already have our names out there and this and that. So definitely it's a low barrier in the sense that in the domestic market. So for example, if it's from the overseas market, so the chances of them entering is also, I could categorize it as low as well. Because most of our industrial brushes that is being used in the local markets is actually, it needed to change very frequently. So in order to do that, when you're dealing with the overseas customer, you need to have a bigger inventory for you to keep the things because you need to order it by the container sizes to actually to cut down the logistic costs and everything. And by saying like the logistics and stuff like that, because it's coming from the overseas, you might get a chance to have a delay in the products that you need that actually will affect your production line somehow.
Okay, I suppose you pride yourself in your long-term relationship with your customers. But what if this competitor actually tried to compete with you by offering lower prices?
In my past experience, it's actually there is actually a fight over like the prices. But again, as I said, in the same time that we pride over our long-term relationship with our customers, we also pride in our quality commitments in our products. So our customer gave, we gave the commitments to our customers that actually our quality is, I couldn't say the best, but then it is definitely better than the others.
Okay, if I were to shift our attention to the labor market, because we know that the industrial brush industry is pretty labor intensive and is highly dependent on foreign workers. Do you face challenges in terms of shortage of staff, in terms of your manufacturing segment?
To answer that, no, it does not affect us that material. So in fact, that because for our manufacturing lines, most of our machines came from Europe countries and all of it is basically semi-automatic. So it doesn't really require a lot of intense labor to actually work on the machine itself.
I know that you have also allocated 10 million ringgit to increase automation in your manufacturing process in order to be less labor intensive. But in the meantime, the government is also implementing new minimum wage of 1,500 ringgit. So how would that impact your business?
So this one, the new law coming from the government itself, I think it has definitely affect a lot of the SMEs in Malaysia itself. So, I mean, with the IPO coming by that we are actually purchase more additional and more advanced equipments for our manufacturing line. So basically we were hoping that to increase the capacity could help us to leverage or to do a leverage on the overheads, meaning that we could cut down from the overhead control the profits of our manufacturing segments.
So are you looking at an economies of scale here? So you want to have more output so that you can justify this additional cost from wages increase?
So meaning that I think, to put it this way, I think it's like the more machineries that we're going to equip in maybe 1 or 2 years. From this sense that we actually could produce more brushes in a shorter time span, so that we could cut down like the OT cost or some of the things from the overheads.
I see. And since we're talking about your manufacturing segment, in September 2021, you have had a group of employees that were tested COVID positive at your plant that MOH has requested that you shut down your plant for a few days and have resulted in delivery delays. So what preventive measures do you have in place now to avoid future disruption to operation in case of another pandemic outbreak?
This is a very good question. So actually, you know, COVID hit us just a snap of a finger. Everyone was, it's really unexpected and stuff like that. So, I mean, in the future plans, as for our contingency to prevent this happening, because actually in our production line, we practice to have to maintain a certain of stock levels for our customers. I mean, for our major customers that we keep repeating the same specification of the industrial brush itself. So we would actually to have a certain amount of the brushes to be kept in our inventory. So in that sense, when there's any disruptions in our manufacturing, so we could actually have someone to deliver the brush to them, because we kept the stock for them.
So you're now practicing just-in-case model instead of maybe, I suppose in the past you were doing a just-in-time. If I were to move on also to supply chain, because we're talking about that right now, right? Approximately 50% of your total purchase is from suppliers located in Hong Kong and China. Are you impacted by the global supply chain crunch since China and Hong Kong have been practicing strict lockdowns in the past months?
In this sense, I think the impact wasn't that material for us, because we were still receiving the materials that we need from both of the suppliers. I think during the lockdown itself from the, I think 2020, I think 2020 was the lockdown,
yes,
right? So
that's right.
I think we would get the things at a slower pace, but definitely it was on time for us to produce our goods, because we practice like a quarterly order. So we will plan the usage in a quarterly basis and then ask our supplier to send in the goods for us by a monthly basis. So we definitely have like a certain amount of the safety stock in our inventory in case that there's any disruption in the supply chain itself.
Yeah, but that was 2020, and China actually had a very good handling of the COVID situation until recently, that things are actually out of control, and you can see Shanghai and Beijing perhaps going into lockdowns. So do you foresee that to be a challenge to your supply chain maybe in the next few months?
Based on my experience, I don't think it's a very big impact for us, because during this season of the China lockdowns and everything, we are still getting the amounts of the goods we need from the China suppliers.
I want to ask you a little bit about the currency challenge here, because as we know, the ringgit has weakened quite substantially recently. Has the weaker ringgit impacted your operation? And what do you do to prevent big forex movements that may impact your cost of production?
So for this question, I don't think the foreign exchange rate has impacted us a lot, because our company practices what we so-called like the natural hedging, which means that we actually deal with our customers in USD. So with the USD, after the payment collection and everything, we would use the USD to actually to repay the suppliers.
I want to ask you about your ESG efforts over here. So the core for circular brush, lath brush, and also household brush are actually made out of plastic materials produced through a plastic injection molding process. What is Yuli doing in terms of the ESG front to reduce reliance on plastic usage?
So for this, actually, in our company, we are existingly, we are actually practicing what we so-called is the reconditioning of the brushes so that the customers would send back their used brushes to us, and then we would do the removing of the bristles and then to replace it with a newer bristles. This is actually a step to actually to reduce the plastic waste that they're going to produce when they're using our brushes.
And then what do you do with the replaced bristles?
So maybe the replaced bristle, we will actually recycle it or to sell it to the other recycle plant, then we recycle the plastic itself.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill, I have been speaking to Ang Po Yee, Executive Director of Yuli Pacific Group Berhad. I am Tan Chen Lee, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.